Well, good evening and welcome to the Wednesday webcast from the Adoption and Fostering Podcast from with me, Scott Casson-Rennie, and himself,
Al Coates.
And tonight we are joined by our lovely friend. Well, I think we can call each other friends because we all know each other from Ruth Whiteside. So we're going to come to you in a minute, Ruth. But before that, Al's got a little little advertisement he needs to crack on with. So off you go, Mr. Coatesy.
Okay, so on the 12th of March, we're going to be holding a small practice learning event between 9 o'clock and 1 o'clock, where we're going to be sharing some, we're going to be talking and sharing around the topic of challenging violent aggressive behaviour. So we're going to be talking from a perspective as individuals have experienced that behaviour in our households, and we're going to be sharing explicitly some really good practice learning about the impact on families, about how that outplays, how to support families as they attempt to navigate what is a very complicated process. Now, the tickets are £25 per head for the whole morning, and it will be available for download and recording afterwards. But if you have five friends, you can get four. You can get five tickets for the price of four. Is that right, Scott? Have I said that right?
That's right, yeah. You nearly got it wrong, but you got it right. Well done.
I pulled myself back from the edge. And you can find event links. Pull it right from the brink. From the brink. And the link to that is on Eventbrite, and it's on our Facebook page, which you're probably watching here. Or if you're listening on the podcast, it's in the podcast notes. Or if you're on Twitter, I have no idea.
Scroll.
Keep scrolling. Don't stop scrolling.
Well, I'm not marking you because I'm bored of marking you on them, but it seemed all right to me. I wasn't, it was fine. Yeah.
Solid seven.
It kind of sounded like you'd had a few goes before, to be honest.
Probably in his downstairs bathroom this afternoon, or his downstairs toilet this afternoon. Probably reciting.
Passing in the mirror.
Yeah, exactly. So if you can join us, then do. It's a shame we couldn't have done it earlier, obviously, with all that's going on, and we'll be out the other side, hopefully, off this touchwood of this lockdown by the 12th of March, but it might be useful for some as we go forward. So anyway, Ruth, welcome.
Hello. As
I said, we are we've all kind of worked together in various different ways and connections and all that sort of stuff. A little introduction from you would be really good, and if somebody's watching or listening who doesn't know who you are.
Okay, absolutely. Well, I have been a primary school teacher for my professional career, and that was more or less 20 years. Kind of within that, did lots of had various roles, including SANCO, including acting deputy head, acting head teacher at one point. So I've kind of got a really good handle on primary education, certainly in England. But I left. I kind of left to set up my own business. Lots of reasons for that. But kind of one of the reasons was feeling fairly unfulfilled by the nature of the English curriculum. And knowing that I kind of wanted to see a more holistic approach to it. And I think I just got a bit fed up, really, of having to toe the party line and follow what we do in English schools. And with no opportunity, really, to be able to say, why are we doing it like this? So I decided to leave, set up my own coaching business. And the idea with that was to coach teachers, because I think teachers are struggling. They were struggling before COVID, certainly struggling now. But my main focus is using emotional intelligence, so it's EQ coaching. And that's what I tend to do. So I do a lot of work with Six Seconds, who are a not-for-profit organisation, who really focus on EQ across all different sectors. So I think that's me.
Yeah. So I've written down there, so you're a bit of a rebel then, in some ways, that you wanted to kind of...
Yeah,
we know that, but I'm just asking.
I do think there's a much greater case for working within and subverting from within. But you know, when it's a system-wide issue, there's no subverting from within. It's kind of get yourself out there and come at it from a different angle.
Yeah, and you say that, you know, emotional intelligence or EQ, which you can give us a definition in a minute. That's not just in schools. That's in a lot of sectors.
Right across the board, I think.
And I think
what hopefully we'll kind of talk about is this idea that EQ is for absolutely everybody. So it has, you know, it has practical applications, whoever you are, however old you are, whatever job you do, it just goes right across the board.
Okay. Yeah.
So can I ask, like, on a really practical level, because it's, you know, without being cynical, but, you know, if things come round, you know, there's, you know, there's the one, it's attachment aware, then it's thrive, and then it's on to the next thing. Can you kind of sell to me what EQ is, you know, kind of outside of that, which feels a little bit like jargon, but I don't think it is. But what are we actually talking about in a classroom environment or with work, like with children? What is emotional intelligence? What is it? That's maybe a big question.
It's just a little bit of a big question.
Tell me everything.
Tell me everything. What, the space of an hour?
45 minutes.
EQ really is about self-awareness. And you can't really have self-awareness unless you're in tune with your emotions. And you can't then harness the power of those emotions to kind of do differently. So you need to kind of start to understand how you're feeling, why you're feeling, it. But you also need to recognize that it's from understanding that that you can then start to choose to do things differently or the same, depending on, you know, the outcome you're looking for. But, you know, there's that kind of expression or quote. The definition of madness is to do the same old, and expect different results. I'm pretty sure I've got that completely backwards, but hopefully
I know the quote you mean.
And I think the thing about EQ, about emotional intelligence, is that once you understand why you behave as you do, what your patterns of behaviour are, and what your emotions are, that you can then think, okay, so if I were to do it a little bit differently, I might get a better outcome from this. So if we think about a class of children, all of whom will have different levels of emotional intelligence. And we all have emotional intelligence as well. For some of us, it might be deeply hidden, but we all have it.
Scott.
well, I was thinking more about that, actually, but, you know.
Do not draw me into an argument. Come on, you two. I'm not going to be scoring either one of you tonight on your levels of EQ.
thank you.
But, you know, if you kind of apply that to a group of kids, it's about setting up an environment where they can start to learn the process of exploring their own emotions, of understanding what it is they're feeling, give it a name, use that knowledge to self-regulate, understand that if they, you know, if they don't give in to the impulse to poke their partner in the eye with their pencil, but actually start to think about why they might be feeling really frustrated with their partner, then actually they might get somewhere a bit more constructive than you know, being sort of dragged to the head because they've poked somebody in the eye with a pencil. So for me, it starts young. It really should start young. You know, we need to get this into schools. We need to get this working with parents, with teachers. You know, teachers need to be on board with this because this is about self-regulation ultimately.
I mean, that's something that I think a lot of the families that we connect into, you know, the nature of adoption and fostering is children who've perhaps had less than ideal starts in life and some of those normal developmental processes, you know, those kind of most, those very beginnings are not present. And so that emotional, is that where we would find the building blocks of emotional intelligence then, in those kind of very, those very early interactions with caregivers?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, as you say, you know, it hinges on those relationships and it hinges on levels of trust, you know. And this is why I'm really interested in working with the teachers particularly, because they have to build those relationships with those kids, whether those kids are in care, whether they are kind of a pupil premium children, whether they're vulnerable for a different reason, maybe they've got an SEND. Teachers have got to build that relationship with those kids. And they can do that by developing their own emotional intelligence so that they can then use the principles and apply it to the kids they're working with. So it's a, you know, and I'm a big kind of, I very often talk about EQ as a way to support oneself, to support others. I think teachers who are expected to do 101 different things over the course of any one day don't always get the opportunity to understand the importance of relationships. They don't have that training on their initial teacher training courses. They don't get a lot of that in those, you know, first couple of years of teaching, unless they specifically request it, unless they're working in a school that's perhaps got some sort of additional resource base for kids with, say, SEMH. And I think if we want to kind of develop this notion of self-regulation, we have to be able to co-regulate. But we can't co-regulate with those kids if we don't know what we're doing and if we don't really understand the premise behind it. So I think that's, you know, my main kind of passion is really about working with the adults in school. Because from that point onwards, if you've got lots of teachers who are trained or understand the principles of EQ, they're much more likely to be able to support the kids more effectively because they'll have those strategies to hand.
Can I just ask quickly, because the EQ, that's not an acronym for emotional intelligence.
It is. Well, yeah, it's because it's IQ and EQ.
Right,
so,
okay.
So it's EQ, emotional intelligence, as opposed to intelligence quotient, if that makes sense.
For the stupid people like me, I would know. So there you go. Not, thank you.
If yes, I should really have been clear about that earlier. I think lots of people in America call it EI as opposed to IQ.
Right, okay, yeah.
But we over here call it EQ. So.
Yeah,
you know, Scott's not heard a word you've said for the first 10 minutes because he's been thinking about that.
Because I'll tell you what I think is interesting is the fact that the kind of principles of it really, it could apply to any adult who is with any child.
Absolutely.
And I think it's you know, when you were saying earlier about, you know, being in tune with your own emotions, and how many adults in the world are really, really in tune with their own emotions to be able to then do the role that they need to do, whether that's as a parent, a carer, a teacher, you know, whatever. I mean, it must, I know that, you know, a lot of the time I'm not in tune with my emotions. I know that. I can hold my hands up and say that. So how can I then relate to my young people, or do I just block it out because I don't want to deal with my own emotions? You know, is that a common theme?
Absolutely, and I think it's such a common theme. I think I started looking at EQ several years ago, and then I kind of did it, looked at it through my master's degree in education. And then I kind of picked up on the 6 seconds thing, so investigated that. So my EQ journey, if you like, has been kind of a long time in the making. But it's really only in the last couple of years that I kind of finally understood that I am great at suppressing my emotions. And that, you know, for me, you know, it's been a bit of a transformational experience, because I've suddenly recognized, my God, that's my pattern of behavior. What the hell? How is that even, how does that get me the best possible outcome? Yeah. So, so I think, it is something that we tend to suppress our emotions because A, we're really busy. B, we haven't got time to kind of think about it, because quite often it brings big thoughts that we maybe aren't ready to confront or challenge or explore. And you're vulnerable. When you start to kind of unpick your own emotions, you start to feel very vulnerable. Yeah. And so understandably, people don't want to do that. And yet we need to do that, because we need to be authentic. We need to be kind of showing up, whether that's as a teacher, whether that's to our own kids, you know, wherever we're working, we need to be kind of ourselves. And we can't truly be ourselves if we haven't got a clue what's going on in our own heads and why we behave as we do. And I think for me, that's the really cool thing about EQ, is understanding through self-awareness why we do as we do. Because if we can change how we do things, we might get a better outcome, whatever that outcome looks like.
You've really made me think. And do you know when you've heard things lots of times? Because obviously, I, you know, we've worked together, and I've, and, you know, some, you know, I've heard you speak to different groups of people, and I'm maybe confessed to not paying as much attention as I should have done.
Really?
but you're so emotionally intelligent. You knew.
It's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. But I just sort of got this real link, and obviously, a lot of the stuff we, Scott and I, do is about supporting parents to support children, and just this idea of really the need for parents to really, well, and teachers, anyone who works with children, is to really bottom out this self-awareness thing. Because that is, you know, we were, Scott and I were often talking about, you know, people will come to us and say, my child does this, help me. And you think, I can't, because I can't see you in the picture. You're not able to put yourself in the picture. So it's about, my child is behaving like this. And you go, yeah, but what are you doing? What are you bringing to this buffet? And if you can't see what you're bringing, then you can't really give people effective. You're just giving people really blunt tools, aren't you? And how do you even, you know, because even self-awareness is really tricky, because some people think they're self-aware and they're not. Scott.
I've just admitted I'm not. What more do you want from me, man?
I want confession. No. So how do you even start that process for people? Do you, I mean, are there practical tools or ways to kind of help people start to think about self-awareness?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's obviously lots of kind of, you know, you could Google emotional intelligence and come up with 601 different kind of websites, things, people to look at, TED Talks, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, obviously that's always a good starting point. But I think for me, if we're looking for a practical tool that or a strategy that you can do to start to kind of think about your own emotional state, is to quite literally check in with yourself every day. So, you know, you could be walking the dog, you could be doing the dishes, you could be, I don't know, you could just be doing anything. But it's about stopping yourself for that split second and just asking yourself the question, how am I feeling right now? And exploring what comes up for you. So, and it all sounds very kind of a bit abstract, I suppose, but what I found with people who I've worked with who have done this, with people that I've coached, teachers that I've coached, and I've asked them to keep a kind of an emotions diary, for want of a better word, it's just been really helpful, because they've started to see patterns emerging, or they've started to recognise, okay, there are certain situations that trigger me, and I actually hadn't really put that together before. So how do I therefore either avoid those situations that trigger me, or how do I learn to deal with them better so that I don't get frustrated or angry or upset? You know, and obviously we always seem to kind of talk about the, if you like, the I don't like to use the word negative emotions, because there's no such thing as a negative emotion. Every emotion is telling you something, giving you some data that you need to pay attention to. But we tend to think about, you know, well, what's it, you know, when you're frustrated, what does that look like? So start to think more about, you know, well, if I'm not feeling very happy now, if I'm not feeling very secure or settled or safe, if I'm not feeling joyful because I can smell spring in the air, or if I'm not feeling joyful when I see that first lamb, you know, the first lamb of the year, what would it feel like if I did? And then you can start to make that little shift towards thinking just a little bit differently, if that makes sense. So I think checking in with yourself is a really good, and also asking other people around you that you trust, obviously, you know, how am I showing up today? Because sometimes, you know, if you're not very self-aware, you might not know that actually you're being, you know, grumpy again, because maybe because it's that fallow time between the end of the working day and before you sit down to eat. Maybe for you, that's a difficult kind of hour of sluggishness or whatever it might be. Maybe you don't see that, but you know, ask your partner, ask your kids. It's like, yes, Dad, you're always like this at this time of day, so what are you going to do about it? But sometimes you have to ask those questions in order to find out, okay, so what is it? If that makes sense.
It does.
I've stunned you into silence.
Well, you've just got me thinking about it. If I was to ask my children anything to do with me, they would just go, yeah, you're this, you know. You know. I'm not sure I need that kind of negativity in my life.
Don't need that, those bad vibes.
But I think it's an interesting point, isn't it? Because I think I do wonder. I mean, I know that I don't. I know I have certain. I'm only using this as examples. I'm not kind of sharing, you know, taking over. But you know, I know at 3 o'clock that if I don't have a nap, I need to have a coffee. It's that kind of thing, because I know that I'm starting to feel a bit sluggish, and you know, it's just one of those times in the day where that's the way it feels. And then I know kind of when I'm going to be. My kind of anxiety is going to be heightened and kind of later on in the day, in terms of, you know, people coming in and all that sort of stuff, and you know, kind of what mood are they in, you know, how's their day been, etc., etc. So I think that once you've said it, like you've said it there, I think actually if you just take the time, because I don't think we don't look, you know, we talk about self-care and stuff. I mean, this is within that kind of, you know,
absolutely
on that spectrum of self-care, is it, where you actually just check in with yourself every day.
Yeah, and just kind of recognizing, okay, so I feel rubbish today, so what's that all about? And sometimes we don't ask ourselves that question, so we feel rubbish, so we just get on with the day, we're really grumpy, everybody hates us, we're rubbish at work, whatever, you know. And you know, imagine a teacher in that state of mind, you know. And I know, hands up, I've done that myself. And it's you know, because you have an impact, you know, that there is this thing called emotional contagion. It does exist. You know what it's like yourselves when your own kids or your partners come in from work or whatever. They're beaming. Perhaps they've got a bunch of flowers on the way home. Perhaps the kids have picked some daisies or whatever it is. They come in and they're full of joy and happiness. And that rubs off on you. You feel that. Equally, as you said, Scott, you know, if they come in and they've had a terrible day at school, then you know you've got some, you're going to have to draw your reserves of patience for this, because there's a lot of tiptoeing around. So I think it's about being able to, to me, you see, it's kind of common sense. that we check in with ourselves, that we just think, okay, if I'm feeling rubbish today, and I don't want to do whatever it is I've got to do, what is the problem? Where is that coming from? Because it's not good enough, I don't think, to just allow yourself to be grumpy. I'm not saying we're not allowed to wallow in it, because we all like to wallow sometimes. We need to wallow sometimes. But it's about recognizing what would be the impact, both on the people around me, in terms of my productivity, and in terms of my general mental well-being as I go through the day. Because if I go to bed tonight still grumpy, what does that say about tomorrow? So you kind of got to, I think you've got to take responsibility for checking in with yourself and exploring those emotions.
And of course, at the minute, I guess that kind of amplifies a little bit as well, because people aren't getting as much time, and we are stuck within potentially four walls with people that, you know, we might not like sometimes.
Yeah.
And they might not like us.
Just ask my daughter. She'll tell you.
So I guess it's even more important, right? It's important at the best times, you know, from what you're saying. But it's even more important now that we kind of just make, I mean, even if it's just a couple of minutes, you know, I'm thinking of a load of people that I read who tweet about, you know, how they're feeling and all that sort of stuff. And it's great that they're able to kind of share that, but they need to kind of, that's interesting. I like that.
Yeah. And I think the thing to remember as well is that you will always feel an emotion. You feel more than just one emotion at any one time, but there will be one that kind of is more obvious. So it might be anger at a particular, I don't know, because you've listened to the latest political kind of rantings or whatever. And so you might be feeling angry, but actually there will be lots of emotions underpinning that. And the anger sometimes is somewhat misplaced, because perhaps the anger comes from a real sense of fear. So you're angry because you're fearful. So it's about kind of really exploring those emotions. I think, so where's my fear coming from then? What's that? Where's it coming from? And why am I fearful? Because then you can perhaps, again, move out of the anger phase and think about, just think a bit differently about it.
It is fascinating, isn't it? Because I think it
is, isn't it?
In some ways, we just, In some ways, I can see that I just, for a lot of my life, I just kind of ploughed on through emotions and wasn't able to necessarily place them with events or circumstances. Mm-hmm. It was just, oh, today I'm this and today I'm that. Mm-hmm. As I've got older, it's been a bit easier. But I was thinking about my children and just helping them articulate how they feel. Mm-hmm. And that, so... Even just when, because it's when they're angry, you know, and they're shouting and screaming at you, go, how are you feeling right now? Yeah, yeah, that's going to work. That's going to by jingo, they said,
thrown at you.
Yeah, by jingo, papa, I feel somewhat vexed by your questions. but giving them the language and giving them the practicing it with them, even with them, my youngest who, you know, there's sometimes she's just really different in personality to all my other children. So often having conversations about what feelings feel like. So we were talking about sadness and I was saying, yeah, but what does that feel like? Is that in your fingers or your toes? And she was going, oh no. And we had this really interesting conversation about feelings that was sort of removed from that moment of sadness. You know, we were talking about sadness that had happened previously. And then, lo and behold, one turned up today. But that's life for you, isn't it? Yeah. But really helping children. So does that sort of stuff help? Because that was why I was going to think you should give me this example of helping children to rate the intensity of feelings, not necessarily talk about the feeling, but the intensity of the feeling. Tell me about that.
Absolutely.
And what you do with children.
So
that's a long old question, isn't it?
It is, I know. Sorry. I'm like, what was the question? No, don't.
Is there a point? Is there a point? Is it going anywhere?
We'll come back to the emotometer, but I just kind of want to pick up on the point you made about, you know, talking with your children, your own children, about emotions. And I think that for me is the crux of it, particularly for teachers. Because if we model, and that could be explicitly or implicitly, and preferably both, but when we're modeling something, it's making it okay for the children to follow. So it's making it, it's giving kids a shared language. They're all hearing it. They're all relating it to specific instances or examples of things that happen in the school day. So the teacher is able to start to really work their EQ magic on the kids. And one of the ways that you can kind of look at that and measure it and rate it is to use the emotometer, which, and I'm sure, I don't know where that phrase comes from, the word comes from. I think I might have pinched it from somebody. I think normally you see it written as emotion meter, but I've kind of shortened it to emotometer. But it's basically like a thermometer. And at the top of the thermometer, you've simply got one word, high, and at the bottom, you've got low. And so when you're talking to children, we are very guilty of using words like sad, angry, happy. And that's fine, but there's probably 100 words to describe the different degrees of sadness. And there's probably 100 words to describe the different degrees of happiness. And we don't tend to give children that vocabulary. But if we can start to rate the intensity of their feelings on the emotometer, then again, you can start to share that language with kids and you can start to see patterns emerging. So if, for instance, so a really concrete way this has worked in the past for me is trying to work out why year six came in every lunchtime. It was a big junior school. Why year six came in every lunchtime absolutely full of fizz, and it wasn't particularly productive, but it was kind of snarky and having argued with other kids out on the playground and stuff. And so we started to keep this emotometer, and every lunchtime they'd come in and we'd do a bit of deep breathing and just trying to get them to calm down a bit, and then to find out where they were at on the emotometer. So somebody might say, oh, I'm feeling angry, miss. Okay, that's fair enough. How angry are you feeling? Like, are you stotting mad, angry? Are you furious? Are you merely feeling vexed, to use Al's word? And by placing yourselves on that emotometer, high intensity or low intensity, then we could start to see a picture of what was emerging. And as a consequence of that, we actually changed the setup of their dinner hour in order to kind of try and alleviate some of the problems they were experiencing. But it also means, you know, if, and again, I've used this lots and lots of times, you know, you're just about to start your maths lesson. You do a quick emotor meter, you realise that all the kids are way up here, you know, they're all kind of completely hyper, perhaps they're going on the school residential next week and they're all getting really excited. And if they're, you know, if they're super hyper and they're putting themselves up on that high scale of the emotor meter, I am not going to introduce them to algebraic equations today. I'm actually going to think, I need to be doing something different in maths, because doing algebraic equations for the first time isn't going to be particularly productive given where they're at. Equally, if they're all a bit, you know, perhaps they've come back from the residential, they're all completely shattered. So they're all kind of feeling, you know, their intensity of emotions is fairly low. Again, I might not really want to be doing that writing exercise with them, because it's, you know, what, you know, why would you do that? You maybe want to be thinking, okay, what am I going to do to bring them up a bit, to enliven them, to get them to start to think, okay, well, I can get myself out of this perhaps flat mood or perhaps lethargy. And again, it's being explicit. So talking to the kids about why you're doing this, why are we doing the emotor meter? Why is it that, you know, you think I've changed today's lesson in maths because you're all up there on that on the top of that emotor meter? So again, it's a really good, and there are so many things you can do with that, because you can be collecting emotion words. You can be thinking about what, you know, if little Bobby says he's feeling furious and somebody else says they're feeling mad, you know, what does that look like? You know, are they both manifested, like displaying the same symptoms, you know, for want of a better word? So it's really getting kids to start to unpick the emotions so that they can then recognize, because of my emotions, that has led to my this particular behavior. It's and I'm not talking here just about, you know, bad behavior in inverted commas. I'm just talking about behavior generally. Because we feel an emotion, we kind of think about what that means for us, and then we do something related to that. None of this is conscious. You know, it all just happens. But actually, if we understood the emotion and we understood the thinking and we understood the behaviours, that's when change can happen.
I think that's really interesting, because I was thinking as well, if you've got a class, I mean, this, for parents homeschooling, this works. How are you doing right now? Instead of kind of just going, there's your laptop, crack on. Sort of finding out if your kids are in a kind of just a low ebb, then get up, run around the garden, let's have a 5 minutes kickabout, let's do star jumps, and let's get a bit of blood going, and you know, and so just kind of meeting children where they're at. Not, obviously you can't build the entire world around getting perfect matching emotions with activities, but it sounds like blooming obvious when you talk about it in those terms, doesn't it?
I know, and I think that for all that it's obvious, and for all that, you know, when you kind of start to kind of explore it and it goes and you recognize it and you think, oh yeah, I hadn't thought of that before. But that doesn't mean to say it's easy. It doesn't mean to say it's easy once you recognize it to then do it, because it does require constant modeling, constant doing, being aware of, kind of recognizing that how you're feeling today is going to impact on your class, on your kids, on your partner, you know. So, and that can be exhausting, because you just say, I just want to wallow today. I want to have a bad day. I'm gonna stay in bed, pull the duvet over my head, and that's it. I'm done. And there's nothing wrong, of course, with actually sometimes just saying, yeah, okay, I'm feeling rubbish today, and I'm just going to sit there. I'm going to sit there with that emotion, because I haven't got the energy to do different. So it's not about trying to pull yourself up by the bootstraps. It's about recognizing those emotions, recognizing when it's okay just to sit with it, recognizing when perhaps you need to do something about it. And again, that's all around mental health and well-being, building resilience. You know, it kind of ticks all of those boxes.
Yeah, because I was just going to say about that as well. I mean, you know, if you're not in the right headspace, and you know, I'm thinking more about it now. I mean, I've lots of experience with mental health, but I've never really thought about my own until very recently with all this that's going on. If that makes sense, and you know, just things like, as an example, yesterday, you know, we're trying to buy this property that's taken forever, but we went and spent a few quid on stuff that we wouldn't normally spend some money on. And I felt really down until I went and did that. Are we boring you now? Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Shut up. Yeah. So some of us have got jobs.
See, and then that sort of thing gets said, you know, by somebody who is, sorry, you know, quite honestly, he's just too greedy and he's got too many jobs. And then you're sitting, yeah, see, yeah, I've embarrassed him now, haven't I? But it's that kind of thing, you know. It's only recently that I've kind of really started to become aware of my own moods, my own, you know, how things are making me feel at the minute. And I guess if you weren't in the right place, to begin with, and there's not very much that you could do about it, but if you can start from a good place in terms of being aware, then it could have a positive impact on your mental health.
Absolutely. And I we're missing a trick, I think, with kids particularly. Yeah. And particularly for those kids who haven't had the best of starts, because it's more important than ever that they get this kind of holistic approach to education from people who are equipped to do that. And I think that's probably my major sort of beef about the whole system, is that we as teachers, when we just don't always have the right equipment. And by that I mean that we don't have our own knowledge, our own skill set maybe isn't appropriate or isn't enough for probably a large proportion of children, because there will be groups of kids who, for whatever reason, have got their own little needs, issues that need to be addressed. And if we don't get that right, then all we're doing is perpetuating that potential issue for the future and with all that brings with it.
Yeah, wow.
It is interesting, because I was over the summer with one of my children. We've had lots of bizarre incidents, but one of them was that I just noticed my teenager was really low mood, and it just sort of dawned on me that she was just, there's lots of like fizzy behaviour, but it actually just, I sat down with her one day and I said, you know, I'm just really sick of this. Not her, but just of lockdown. I'm sick of, and just was quite honest about my own emotions, which is kind of not my style particularly. And I sort of, and we just had this conversation about how it was, must be really difficult being stuck at home with me, you know, as your dad, you know what I mean? It's like not fun. But it was just, it kind of burst this bubble where we were able to kind of acknowledge that things weren't great. But things are not terrible, but not great. And it just feels like that for me, as I'm getting older, I'm finding that much easier. But 20 years ago, that just wasn't even on the cards.
Yeah. Because maybe, you know, 20 years ago, much younger, and therefore less aware of the bigger issues of life. I mean, I think that is something that's good about aging. I'm not trying to say anything here about your age.
No, I'm loving getting older. I mean, every day I'm just so thankful I'm a day older. Can you imagine being 20? Can you imagine living hell?
Exactly. Not these days. Exactly. No, thank you.
And that's the thing that I think we can really revel in as we're getting older, is that sense that perhaps we have got some more experience, more understanding of the world around us. And imagine if you could apply an emotional intelligence lens to that, and that could make you really a really helpful support in whatever role you have, because you'd be applying that wisdom with something concrete, with some actual concepts and you know, linking it to some emotions which I think people like to ignore, really, and you know, we ignore our emotions at our peril, really.
I think this is a huge issue for our community, if I'm really honest. I think that with some of the unique aspects of our community are that we live with kind of slightly complicated children, which is not unusual, but I think that some parts of our community live with sense of loss and grief and loss of, we think we've talked about when you're familiar with the whole idea of chronic sadness, that you know, I've got friends who are my age and their children are not the children they anticipated, and their retirement is not on the cards, you know, that some of them are looking at special guardianship. And I think that you really need to be plugged into what's going on there, don't you? You really need Absolutely. To be savvy if you're going to look after difficult children.
Yeah. And because that comes down to your mental well-being, mental health, that if you can be, rather than fighting against emotions by kind of suppressing them or by just putting somebody else's emotions first, if you can not do that and really kind of think about yourself, and this is not about being selfish or navel-gazing or anything like that, but this is just about recognizing if you are to maintain and sustain those difficult relationships, deal with those difficult emotions, you've kind of got to be ready to explore your own emotions, get yourself into a point where you understand that perhaps the reason why that particular situation is difficult is because emotionally you're not dealing with it very well. It's not that the situation is difficult, it's that you're not dealing with it very well, whatever that might look like. And it's but to do that, you have to admit that you're not dealing with it very well. You have to be vulnerable to somebody, and to yourself, to say this is not working. And you, there is that sense of loss of control almost, because maybe that situation, you've dealt with it before by being perhaps incredibly strict or routine, bound by routines or whatever it might be. And to do different might feel like, oh my God, I'm going to lose control of this situation. But I think it's small steps, and thinking, what would happen if I'd looked at this situation just a tiny bit differently, and reframe it, you know. And again, I'm aware that it sounds horribly like I'm saying, oh, a little bit fine, pull your socks up, you know, there's a silver lining to every cloud, yada, yada, yada. But there is something in this kind of self-reflection that allows you to look at situations and deal with situations perhaps more differently.
This really, you've given me so much food for thought, and I've had a really unusual week. I at the beginning of the week, I started work and I put Facebook on, because that's how I work, just papping around. And there was a post about, someone had posted a meme. I've got a friend who works in mental health, so it's always a mental health meme. And this one was about it was called high functioning anxiety, and it listed some things. And I read it and I thought, oh my goodness, that's me. And I've always just thought of myself as this worrier, and I've just thought it was silly. And I just started to, I had a whole kind of this downward spiral. But there was a sense at the end of it, I came and I thought, I just need to lean into this stuff and not, my nature is perhaps to try to push through or to put it in a box and just keep going. But actually there was a sense of just not leaning into it in a wallowing sort of way and accepting it. But just kind of go, well, this is what it is. Let's kind of just work it out. And then what I have often, if I feel a bit melancholic, I have a playlist that's called Melancholic Playlist, and I lean into my melancholy. And the music is like drawing it, you know, it's all my sad songs, you know. And that heavy metal 80s sad songs. It's a confession. But it's like drawing out the poison almost. It's like, you know, it's like lancing a boil. At the end of it, I feel infinitely better. But it's kind of going, oh, I'm just going to go with this for a bit. I'm going to lean in. Oh, you've given me lots of food for thought. I might need to walk the dog after this.
It's interesting what you say about music, because one of the things that, you know, I don't cry much, and it would be great if I think, you know, I envy people who are able just to cry and let loose some of that kind of emotional turmoil. But Jason, bless him, the other half, he understands, he knows before I do that I need to have a good cry. So he will just stick on music that he knows, I'll just, Oh my God, I love this song from when I was 17 and happy. But, you know, so it's all, and I end up, you know, weeping and, you know, paradoxically, half an hour later, thinking, okay, this is great. I feel much better now. And,
it's weird, isn't it? You know, and I think as well, because I actually wrote this down earlier, that because you said vulnerable, and vulnerability is kind of, you know, you're scared to be vulnerable at some points. And I think, like, crying can make you feel vulnerable in some ways. But I used to be a massive crier, like, as in, just as you've described it there, Ruth, to be able to get rid of that emotion, if you just sometimes just have a good old cry, whether it's a telly program that's really sad and it just brings on those emotions or whatever. But then in the last kind of, I don't know, maybe it's since I've become a parent, I'm really wary of making a noise from crying. And it stops me from actually doing that. And I can't remember the last time I actually really had a, well, I don't know if I could with the house full, you know, I don't know if I could just take myself off because I'd be scared of being listened to and all that sort of stuff. And that used to be my way of getting rid of my emotions. And I don't know how I do it now because, you know, it's really interesting. Like Al said, you've really kind of spiked a lot of thoughts in my head about how we should and could and, you know, did and... Because if you're showing your vulnerability to your kids, sometimes, I'm not saying all the time, but you know, if I was to just, you know, burst into tears because someone had called me a big fat
something,
that would be showing the wrong side of your vulnerabilities, if that makes sense. Because you know, that would be like they'd just be writing that one down and going, okay, so we know how to get them on that one. But you know, there's another side of it where you know your emotions should be expressed in that way, and it's and you know, I'm just yeah, so that is a really interesting. Yeah.
It's a balance. When you're a parent, I think it's a real balance because you don't want to be freaking your kids out or possibly giving them ammunition. But actually, if you don't show your vulnerabilities, if you don't show that today you're feeling really sad, then how do they know that actually it's okay to be vulnerable? How do they know it's okay to be sad? So then you've kind of got to have this balance and recognizing that what if we want our kids to be able to articulate their emotions, to be able to self-regulate, to be able to manage the stuff that life throws at you, then we need to be, if you like, giving them permission to be vulnerable.
And again,
I think that's such an important thing that, again, I don't think we do enough of. We do nothing of it in schools.
Blimey.
Wow.
This is taking a turn.
I could go on for hours. I mean, seriously, I could go on for hours. You might not want me to. I understand that. That's
right. No, but I think that a lot of this stuff is really intrinsically linked. You know, we, you know, obviously, I do a lot of work around parents who check with challenging aggressive behaviour, and I think that this stuff is kind of the building blocks of helping families to get better because it's systems that are. It's oh blimey! I'm gonna have to go away and have a think. Yeah.
But I think you're right though, Al, that some of the kind of some of the emotional stuff so being over emotional when you're within a family that's, you know, experiencing violent or aggressive behavior, it's really difficult to be able to show emotion because actually that is a kind of more it kind of adds fuel to it. But when, you know, you were talking earlier about when people come to us for advice, my advice is always, well, don't think that you're going to sort it when it happens. You need to wait until afterwards to be able to, you know, both be regulated, to be able to work out how it is that you're feeling and what your feelings are about it, and to be able to put them in a way that aren't going to be antagonistic or, you know, poking the bear, or, you know, to get them to fire up again. It needs to be kind of that you need to be aware of your own kind of feelings about it without going in. And I think that that's maybe, you know, one of the things that we'll be talking about on the 12th of March is how we deal with that sort of stuff, not at the time, because that's never a good idea. You know, if you deal with violent and aggressive behavior at the time, it's just going to make it 50 times worse. So I think it's, I think that kind of, you know, it links into this as well, doesn't it? It links into this, you know, yes, you can be vulnerable and yes, you can show your emotions, but actually it just needs to be kind of balanced and making sure that you're aware of where you're coming from with it.
Yeah,
and fascinating.
And over time, you know, implicitly and explicitly modeling to your kids that appropriate balance and that appropriate, you know, sort of emotions, that how to unpick those emotions so that then when the next crisis happens, it's perhaps turned down a tiny notch, because there is that shared language, there is that shared understanding, you know. And again, as with all of these things, that it's not a quick win, you know, you kind of have to work at it, you know. Whether you're a teacher or a fosterer or, you know, whoever you are, you've kind of got to work at it. But it's ultimately it's about giving empathy, isn't it? And in the first instance, being empathic for self and giving yourself the strategies for just dealing. But it's hugely about empathizing with other people, particularly those young people in your care, those kids in your class, and so on.
By jingo, lots of food for thought. We've gone 5 minutes over, Scott.
Oh, have we? Oh, see, I thought we were on for an hour. Right, sorry. I'll stop talking.
That's fine. It's been really interesting, and I think I think we both would think that it's given us a lot of food for thought, and it's just really. I'm thinking about my next thoughts about how sometimes emotions can be weaponized by parents. Against the children, their vulnerability, they can use it against it. But anyway, that's another topic. I'll go away and ponder that. Ruth.
Coming soon.
Coming soon, yeah. Weaponizing your emotions in adoptive parenting. We'll do a seminar. A whole day on that one. Well, Ruth, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And as always, it's a pleasure. We'll put your, people can find you on Twitter, and you've got a web page thing. Have you?
We've got the CLAP webpage. Twitter is the main one, and LinkedIn. Yeah.
Right. We'll put that in the bio or whatever. Yeah, so have a fantastic week. And we shall speak to you soon.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for having me on. It's been great. I don't often get a chance just to, you know, talk about EQ. Normally I'm kind of training EQ or whatever, but this has been great. So.
Excellent.
Well, it's definitely made our night worth it as well to understand it a little bit better. So thank you.
Thank you very much.